Welcome to World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN. I'm David Dye. Milk Carton Kids join us live today. Kenneth Pettengale and Joey Ryan are crowded around their one microphone. They have a new record called Monterey, which comes out May 19th. They formed in L.A. in 2011 and gave away their first releases. I asked Joey about when the writing for this new album took place.
All of the songs are brand new except for this one that we're about to play, which Kenneth wrote right around the time that we met. I remember...
But technically before we met.
Okay, sure.
I mean, to the extent but with which you would have had any influence or impact on...
You just want to make sure that the world listening knows that this is entirely your creation and
While we're on the record, we shouldn't risk that misconception.
No, you wouldn't want to risk any misconceptions. In any case, in the first week or two that we were playing music together, we were going through a process of learning each other's songs and arranging each other's existing catalogs for this sort of new harmony duo that we may, you know, ended up creating. And I remember Kenneth came one day and said, I wrote this song. We should try and sing this song. And it was this song, Monterey. But we couldn't figure out how to arrange it for our voices. It didn't sit quite right in our ranges somehow, and it just never happened. We never got it. Otherwise, this might have been on one of our previous records. So I actually take it as a point of pride that in 5 years we grew into the song as a band, and now it's one of my favorite ones to play.
Right.
It's a really good song. Did you change the key or something?
We tried all the keys. We did. No, we did.
I don't know. I don't know why we couldn't have done exactly what we're doing now 5 years ago, but we just never. It never happened.
You oversang just generally, and I lacked confidence in my voice.
Yeah. All right.
That's.
That was equal insult. That was good.
Yeah, I was trying. The division of labor and the guitars really hadn't quite assigned themselves.
Also, I think I end up singing the melody now, right? And you sing the harmony.
That's right. Yeah, you couldn't handle the harmony, so I did that. And also, a quick digression.
You have that nice, like, girlish high voice.
Right. A quick digression, though. I didn't say, let's sing it. If you remember, I sent it to you in an email along with sending it to a number of other people whom I wanted to hear the song just because I was proud of it. I wasn't suggesting that we do it. But here we are 6 years later.
So you never meant this for me?
No, I mean, that's not important to the story. I'm just correcting an error that you put forth about 3 minutes ago.
Which was what?
You said that one day I came to you and said we should sing this
song. You did. That's why we tried it.
That wasn't the first time
I remember
that
very
you heard
distinctly
it.
On my brick patio. We tried to sing Monterey, and you couldn't do it.
Yeah, well, we've still got a lot to figure out, Joe.
So it sounds like we're figuring it out right here on the radio in front of the entire audience.
Seems that way. Well, okay, do it. It's a good song.
Do it already. Okay.
I can see the North Star. from this bed. Beneath the sky, the night betrayed, rescued by the Milky Way. Summon out the rain clouds. Someone's sure to hear how loud we'll sing. Blinded by the notion of fog in day and ocean all around. Oh, mom. Thank you. City of Our Lady, Queen of all the angels. Singers in the ringing of the Iron Mission bells, changing all the faces, saving all the names. Everywhere we go, we are the child of where we came. Everywhere we go, we are the child of where we came. Everywhere we go, we are the child.
Milk Carton Kids, that is the City of Our Lady, another one of the new ones. We are a child of where we came. Probably see a lot of people from everywhere in Los Angeles. Is that where that song comes from?
Yeah. Yeah, that song is very specifically set in Los Angeles.
Was there a circumstance of writing it?
Joey rode the subway once. Joey joined the proletariat once in his life.
Are you calling me Bougie?
Yeah, that's what I'm calling you. You never knew your nickname, Bougie Joe?
No, I don't know. I think if that was funny, it would have been my nickname. Is there a circumstance? We both grew up in Los Angeles. And I think there's a very palpable sense of, social stratification there, which is especially noticeable when one rides the public transportation. The public transportation in Los Angeles is one of the most defining, characteristics of the city along socioeconomic lines,
So what Kenneth said is it seems that is the, quote, lower classes that generally use it, right? I mean, it's a city of cars.
It's a city of cars, yeah. It's a city of cars, but only for some people.
Right.
Not for everybody.
Right.
And the people who think of it as a city of cars don't think of it as a city of buses and subways, but for many, 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 many people, it is. And so it's true that I spent a couple weeks, not for any reason that it was the most convenient thing for where I was going in those few weeks, but just entirely riding the subways and the buses. And there's a lot of Los Angeles history, written on the walls of the subway platforms and infrastructure, like in placards and paintings, and the city has gone to the trouble of telling the history of Los Angeles underneath the city. It struck me over the course of those couple weeks, the degree to which the history of the city permeates the city in ways that we don't really think about all the time, especially in the names of everything. The city, the Los Angeles is full name. Is what? What are you laughing
at? Just ready for it. History 101 with Los Angeles History with Joey Ryan.
Oh, yeah.
Here comes the pronunciation of a lifetime.
Anyway, the translation of the full name of Los Angeles is the City of Our Lady, Queen of the Angels.
Right. Now, what I really want to know is
Nuestra Dama.
Oh, yeah, here it is.
Reina de Los Angeles.
Yeah. That whole week that you rode the subways, I want to know how you were able to both ride them and pat yourself on the back for doing so the entire time.
Like I say, it was literally just the most convenient way of getting out to South Pasadena, where I was going, which is one of the most bougie places you can go in Los Angeles.
But, actually I'm surprised that the subway goes that far. I thought it was just right, really central. So
they're expanding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, there's the transportation portion of things here on the show. when I walked in the room, you said, "Oh, it's been a long time since I saw you," and I realized that it actually has. But in terms of your career, a lot has happened. The last album, really found an audience for you guys in a big way, and that's really great. But you were also in the Coen Brothers film Another Day, Another Time, which was a jaw-dropping film to watch and to see all these incredible musicians, yourself included. from Marcus Mumford to Jack White to Joan Baez to Punch Brothers, all these folks all in there. And you were presented, at least in the film, as one of the sort of discoveries for everybody in the film, which must have felt really kind of cool. I mean, what was the experience like for you guys?
It was very flattering. They sent around the portions of the film that to everybody that each person was in, you know, so you got a chance to see what portions of yours they were considering using, so that you could approve it and make sure that you didn't want to like tell them not to use it or something, which was, first of all, considerate, but second of all, was the first time we realized that they were intending to put us in the movie for like 10 minutes. Which, you know, we hadn't expected, and I think they used us to sort of break up the sense of just pure reverence for the entire process that seemed to permeate the rest of the film, and I think they used some of our segments to have a lighter, you know, to strike a lighter moment. At least our interview sections.
Yeah, well, and directly to your question, we were happy to play that part.
Yeah, that's exactly the thing. Our intention.
Right. Well, and also, I mean, we're pretty darn lucky in that sense. You know, those sorts of things really only are about timing. It's not like you can engineer it. It's that a bunch of people who, you know, between whom there's an identity of a show that happens when they're looking to make a certain point. The fact that we embody every single thing that they were looking for is something you can't plan. So we were happy to be that. But also then it was just really cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, how long did the whole process take? Because in the film it's hard to tell what the backstage stuff is about.
It was just 2 days. It was
two days.
Everybody was, there was a day
two
of rehearsal.
2 days and then the show, or just 1 day of rehearsal and then
yeah,
the show?
Well, the band... No, yeah, I mean, I'm sure Punch Brothers was doing homework for a while
right.
before that. But no, you know,
We were there for 2 days.
Yeah, it was Avatar mm-hmm. Studios up on the Upper West Side. They, you know, there's a whole day of just T-Bone and Joel and Ethan kind of holding court
right.
and seeing what's going on. And
that
was
so
cool
nerve-wracking. That whole thing was like build, you know, as like rehearsal. But obviously, we weren't playing with Punch Brothers or any of the other band members, so we didn't really need to rehearse. And when we went in there, I kind of realized like...
Yeah, it was more like auditioning.
Yeah, this is an audition.
Right, right.
This is not a rehearsal. This is like, are these guys going to be okay?
But, you know, then you get to the next day, and it was Town Hall in New York, which is a real old theater. And back in those days, I guess much like these days, promoters or impresarios or anything could really... couldn't care much less about artists or performers. So when they built those theaters, there are these, you know, tiny facilities behind the stage. Mm-hmm. You go into these massive halls, and you don't realize that all these people are tucked into closets mm-hmm. behind the stage. And so that show that had, you know, 40, 45, I mean, like massive people on it, there's not really a dressing room to speak of at Town Hall. There's one, which I think maybe T-Bone took for himself. He like set up a massage table or something. But so the rest of it happened downstairs in this tiny corridor, I mean, where you could barely fit 45 people.
And that's where they got
people.
All that great footage of, you know, everyone sort of people jamming backstage yeah. in that hallway, which was, you couldn't have engineered that, and that wouldn't have happened if it weren't literally the only place to stand
right.
backstage at Town Hall. So all these people just crammed into a hallway together for like 7 hours, and there was nothing else to do but play a bunch of music.
Well, and I was the best example of it. I was sitting there just kind of minding my business because it was a long day. And also the night before, I got really loaded, I guess, and so I was not moving much. And I was sitting there trying to just keep my eye on the wall. And out of the corner of my eye,
were you having difficulty?
I see,
with
yeah.
It seems like a simple
I see
task.
Patti Smith, you know, finally arrives. Like Patti Smith, my gosh. And she kind of appears at the end of one hallway. And she does the thing that I think everybody would expect of Patti Smith or anybody that carries that legacy or demands that kind of admiration. She walks down the hallway slowly, just trying to figure out which door has her name on it so she can kind of get her stuff down and get settled. And so she does this real slow walk, and she gets to the end of the hallway and realizes they're in a door with her name on it. And so she turns around and walks about halfway back, and sits down next to me and turns to me and puts her hand out and says, "Hey, I'm Patty." So it was that kind of weekend.
Oh, God. Sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds great. And there were a lot of people there who hadn't heard you. So you were kind of auditioning for a group. Is a way of looking at it?
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, in the end, they wouldn't have kicked us off the show if it was no good.
Right, you just would have been less of you.
Yeah, but you know what it really turned out, and which, thank God, we weren't aware of it, was they were trying to make a film.
Yeah.
So they ended up making a film about how the show came together. So having the rehearsals, filming the rehearsals, ends up being the entire story for the documentary rather than the show itself.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, it was a great documentary. It is. Yeah. It's still out there.
Well, you know, it's proof that when the people who work in and around music, when they're trying to contextualize it, it's proof that when people really put thought and care into collecting that, that's when it really has the chance to resonate with an audience. And if, you know, in 2015, we live in a world where so much music is delivered to us carelessly and sort of haphazardly. It's always there. It's really easy to get. I mean, it's almost too easy to get, but if some smart people come around and put it together in a way where maybe it tells a story that you wouldn't otherwise have expected, that's, you know, that might be our salvation going forward as far as figuring out what the musical identity of our culture is.
Certainly a way of increasing the worth of it, right?
Yeah, it was for us. We're loaded now.
No, I mean in terms of the worth. People, as you say, dismiss music. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's all, it's there.
No, I was making a cheap joke.
I know. I guess I do. Now I know. All right, guys. Let's do some more of this new album.
1, 2, 3. The only time I ever heard the voice of God was in the silence of the night, in the arms of the one I love, staring at the ceiling up above, like it contained the secrets of the stars. Anytime I ever woke up in a dream, I saw my shadow there staring back at me, moving through the walls and wondering, as all the world rose up inside of me. And I hear the melody that one time played inside my mind, and to love another helplessly, so breathing feels like putting out a fire. Anytime my life flashes in front of me, I see a child there as if on a screen, standing in the shadows flickering. For a moment I know what it means. All this time I lived inside a memory, daylight creeping in through a crack in the weathered seams, severing the ties and trembling, losing all the voices in the wind. And I long to hear the melody that one time played inside my mind, and to love another helplessly, so breathing feels like putting out a fire. above the water rises through the air. All I want's to touch it, feel it on my skin, following its motion, travel where it's been. I'm a little man in a little town. It's a little cold. I'm a little down. I get a little angry, a little bit each day, a little while. We'll dig a little grave. Stitches of my pocket fret upon the seams. My truest secret spilled over my heartbeat. The frail little drop of the poison. I'm a little man in a little town. It's a little cold. I'm a little down. I get a little angry, a little bit each day, a little while. We'll dig a little
that is Poison Tree. I'm making this assumption purely based on first person things. Little man in a little town. I'm sorry, Kenneth, is that one of yours?
That is one of mine.
Okay, I wasn't wrong there. I'm curious about if what has happened with your lives is as pleasing as you thought it would be. By that I mean you guys travel all the time. And have you come to Jesus on that? Have you do you feel okay with that?
Who? I think it's a necessary sacrifice, and at this point, I guess I'll speak for myself. The travel part of it specifically is a sacrifice that is a worthy and necessary sacrifice to be able to play music every night, which the luster of which still has not worn off and only sort of grows for me with each year and each new theater that we get to play. And it's only very recently that we've been getting to play in the rooms that we always wanted to play in. So, you know, and it's been incrementally more and more comfortable in our travels to get there. So I still find it hard to be away from home. I still find it hard to be in transit. But, you know, an hour and a half every night makes it worth it. Yeah. I think is a common tale.
Those of us who've never experienced something like you do every night know that the balance is totally worth it. So
yeah. People, you know, people clap for us like every 3 minutes when we do our jobs. And that's, you know, it's not a bad job.
Well, I'm sorry that we didn't have an audience in here today. I know you. But hey, it's always a treat. And keep writing and keep doing this. It sounds great.
Thank you,
David. We look forward to coming back.
I'm David Dye. World Cafe Words and Music from WXBN is produced at WXBN in Philadelphia. If you'd like to hear more of our World Cafe sessions and get daily cafe alerts, you can sign up at our website at worldcafe.npr.org. As always, thanks for spending your time with the World Cafe.